From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is The Wildcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Wildcast Podcast. As always, I'm Justin Spears here with the one and only Michael Lev, but we're not talking Arizona football. We're throwing a curveball at you. Arizona basketball. Yes, Michael Lev is here to talk about Arizona basketball. Who would have thought?
Justin, I'm to be referred to as Sean Miller's BFF. That's how we're going to go. Yeah, after our little interesting interaction today during his big press conference. It was a little testy, right?
It was.
Slightly.
Because you threw in the trigger words, which were FBI and investigation. And
I had to represent Bruce Pascoe, who's not able to work today.
Bruce is always the one. I mean, if you weren't going to ask that question, Bruce would have asked that question. Right. So at the end of the day, somebody had to do it.
Right. It really wasn't that testy, honestly. He just basically declined to comment on those things. But I thought we learned a lot of stuff today.
Oh, yeah.
It was the first time Miller has spoken since March 15th.
Yep.
I think that's when that game was against Buffalo up in up in Boise. And so he had a lot to talk about. He talked for 55 minutes, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
But I don't know, where do you want to begin? Do you want to begin with DeAndre Ayton, the recruiting class, the roster?
Tell me. One thing that, of course, really caught my eye and it's caught a lot of Arizona fans' eyes and their attention is kind of the outlook of the roster for next season. Again, Arizona, they have six players returning, but they also lose six players, which is their entire starting lineup. You know, DeAndre Ayton, Dusan Ristic, Parker Jackson Cartwright, Alonzo Trier, Raleigh Alkins, and then coming off the bench was Keanu Pinder. So your entire starting five is gutted. And then you kind of have all of these younger, more raw guys that are taking on bigger roles. And one of them is Emmanuel Aycott. And Miller said that he is the what you call today's wing. He could do it all. He could defend, and he can also distribute the ball while also scoring. He kind of compared him to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson today, which I thought was a really good comparison.
And Solomon Hill.
And Solomon Hill, which is a great comparison considering he's had a somewhat of a successful career in the NBA. I mean, he's still playing.
Certainly
for the
was
Pelicans.
A successful college player.
Absolutely. And he didn't really talk about Alex Barcelo, Brandon Randolph, those kind of players. But one player that I really think will have a huge year for Arizona next year, I don't really think he has a choice, is Duke transfer Chase Jeter. And when you talk about players that are replacing other departing players, Chase Jeter is going to step into that role where he's not only replacing DeAndre Ayton, but he's also replacing Dusan Ristic because Arizona's front court is very, very slim.
It's not what they had last year, right?
No.
I mean, they basically had the Twin Towers going a year ago with Ayton and Ristic. And whether that helped them or hurt them is kind of up for debate. I mean, even Sean Miller himself was kind of referring to some of the defensive limitations you have when you go with two bigs. So it sounds like they're going to be more perimeter-oriented, more guard-oriented next year. You referenced Aycott. He said that he could play the four, even, which shows you like the type of roster they're going to have. They're going to maybe be a little more adept on switches, a little bit more versatile. It was interesting to hear him talk about Jeter today. He kind of positioned him as maybe like the most important guy on the team next year. He didn't say it in exactly those words, but that was kind of the impression that I got. Seems like the expectations for him are really high. And as you mentioned, they don't have a ton of size in the front court. And as much as you'd like to play this modern NBA style game with a bunch of guards and shooting threes and stuff, you still have to be able to rebound.
Yep.
So I think Jeter's going to be really important in that regard.
Absolutely. And then adding on to all of that, you still have the incoming players. A nice mix. Again, this is not a recruiting class that Arizona is adjusted to or has been accustomed to over the last
few years. You tell me, Justin.
Well,
how does this compare?
Well, think about last year, 2017, that recruiting class. Highlighted by DeAndre Ayton. Again, at this time last year, we were all talking about how this is Arizona's best recruiting class of all time, and how you mix it in with Alonzo Trier and Raleigh Alkins, and how this is going to be, hands down, the most talented Arizona team ever. Even Lute Olson went out to a Saturday practice when all the recruits came in for a summer, and they were practicing with all the returning players. Lute himself said that this is the most athletic, most talented team Arizona has ever put on a court, and it resulted in a first-round loss to Buffalo.
It did. We'll get to that in a minute. But, okay, but taking Aiden out of the equation, though, everyone else is back from that class that was supposed to be so great, right?
Sure.
Brandon Randolph is back, right?
Sure.
Ira Lee is back.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Barcello is back.
Mm-hmm.
Manuel Acott, we talked about him.
But
all those guys are back. And Miller said today that you couldn't – it wasn't really fair to those guys. You couldn't really get – an accurate assessment of them because the team was so top-heavy.
Yeah.
And they really didn't have sizable roles throughout the year. And he's obviously hopeful that those guys will all blossom and fulfill the potential that everybody thought they had coming in.
Yeah. And we saw a very small sample size of those guys last year. Specifically, Randolph. Randolph hardly ever played. I mean, you talk about the freshmen that were mainly coming off the bench. It was always Emmanuel Acott because – like you just mentioned, him being able to play the four, him being having that long size, but he was also a great defender on the wing. Randolph wasn't that great of a defender. And sure, he was athletic, and he kind of flashed what he could bring to the table in the red-blue game last year. It was he's a very athletic guard that can dunk, but he's also got the ability to shoot three-pointers. I thought he was going to be Arizona's best three-point shooter last year, and he barely even saw the floor. So, again, maybe that freshman jump to your sophomore year, maybe that's where we see Brandon Randolph show his full potential because, again, I mean, I don't really want to compare these two players because they're two totally different players, but when Derek Williams was at Arizona, his talent and everything that he brought to Arizona was leaps and bounds from his sophomore year compared to his freshman year. And
he was pretty good as a freshman, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was pretty good as a freshman. But his sophomore year, he was the best college basketball player in the country. And that says a lot considering, I mean, again, Kyrie Irving was hurt. And there's a lot of other great college basketball players. But I think this is where you see Randolph kind of accept a bigger role and maybe step up to the challenge. Again, that remains to be seen.
Among those guys, Randolph, Barcello, is it Barcello or Barcello?
Barcello,
all right. Randolph, Barcello, Lee, and Acott, they started 8 games total.
Yep.
Among them. And none of them averaged more than 11.6 minutes per game. So really small sample size.
Yeah, and Barcello didn't even play. He didn't play at all in the conference play.
Right. One of the things that I like about players coming back, and I think something that gets lost in the shuffle with all the one and dones is that off season in the weight program,
mm-hmm.
right? All of these guys are going to benefit from that. I see it in football all the time, guys from their freshman to their sophomore year.
Oh, yeah.
Just their bodies change in a major way. And as you know, in order to, play basketball at the highest level, I mean, you need to have a certain amount of strength,
sure.
agility, all those things that you can work on if you have time set aside with the strength staff here, there are very few guys like DeAndre Ayton who just come in and have all of that stuff naturally.
Yeah. You know what's crazy is DeAndre Ayton never touched a weight until he came to Arizona.
So then we have something in common, DeAndre and I. Neither one of us lifts weights.
But yeah, the Chris Rounds is the strength and conditioning coach. And he's been with Miller for 15 years. I mean, that's Miller even said today, I'm pretty sure that's the longest relationship between a strength coach and a head coach. So, again, off-season workout plans. I mean, there's always some weird twist when it comes to the workout plans. Like, I remember Dusan Ristić last year and the year before that. Him and Chris Rounds would go to a boxing coach, mm-hmm. and Dusan Ristić would actually do boxing workouts, and sure enough, that helped him be able to operate in the paint and kind of be able to get physical and be able to rebound a lot better. And it's weird stuff like that over the summer. I mean, that could be very beneficial. That's a pretty good point that you bring up.
Of course. So What did you make of what he said about last season, specifically between the Pac-12 tournament and the NCAA tournament? He sort of referenced to them not having the like enthusiasm, excitement level that maybe they needed to have.
Yeah.
How do you explain that?
I think it was just his way of saying we had one heck of a year, and not talk about the wins. We're just talking about strictly everything that went on off the court, all the headlines. I mean, you talk about not only the FBI investigation leading into the season, but then Raleigh Alkins broke his foot, and then we go months without Arizona being in the headlines, and then boom, Alonzo Trier gets caught with the performance-enhancing drug that was in his system from
which
a year ago.
Right at about the same time that ESPN story came
exactly
out about Sean Miller. So there was a lot of stuff.
There was stuff
swirling around the program, and he barely acknowledged any of it today. He did make some subtle references to things that they had to fight through.
Yeah.
And so forth.
I don't think it was an excuse for him saying, like, hey, we were just fatigued, tired.
He did say, yeah, the season took a toll on us, which I take that to mean not necessarily physically, but like mentally and psychologically.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, which it's a very difficult thing for fans to wrap their heads around. It's a difficult thing to quantify. My own outside observation of that particular team is that there were a lot of impressive parts, but they never really felt like they came together as a whole. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, and again, that's – I don't know if – again, I don't really want to blame him for everything, but I guess the egos and not, I'm not talking about Miller, but I'm talking about Alonzo Trier. I'm talking about Raleigh Alkins and DeAndre Ayton. It just seemed like I shouldn't say egos. I don't think egos is fair. But the way they carry themselves and the way they wanted to improve their draft stock, I think when you get a mesh of guys like that who are really trying to improve their stock to get into the NBA, I just don't think it was a right blend of players. And Miller even brought up a really good point today is, you know, you talk about, you know, 16 seeds beating a one seed. You're probably going to see that more often. And you're going to see the Loyola Chicago's getting far into the tournament. Because why? The teams like Arizona with so many young players, they're very vulnerable.
Didn't you get the feeling when he was saying that he kind of wanted to coach a team like that? That's what I thought.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, man, it seemed like he was pining for the days where he was kind of on the side of the scrappy underdog.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the team that would stay together for several years, you know? But when you're at Arizona under normal circumstances, where the program is right now, you're going to be bringing in these one-and-done caliber players.
That's
going to
happen.
That is the challenge that the coach faces on an annual basis, which is why, to me, it's so incredibly impressive what Calipari's done.
Good point.
At Kentucky, every year they're a contender somehow with almost an entirely different roster from the previous season. And he's dealing with all of those egos, and there's only one basketball to go around and those sorts of things.
And even that one year when they were an 8 seed and they made the national championship, when they lost to UConn, again, that's a team just completely full of freshmen. But Thursday's press conference was a long one. It was a lengthy one. But then after Miller's press conference, but before we talk about Dave Hickey's press conference, what do you think about his statement about DeAndre Ayton going number one overall to the Suns? He said, I'm trying to figure out who's going to be number 2 through 60.
Mm-hmm.
He says DeAndre Ayton's already a locked number one pick.
You know what?
Rightfully so.
Yeah. We'll talk about Hickey in a minute. But, you know, your coach is always going to kind of stand up for his guy, right?
Sure.
That's not uncommon. But the way that he talks about Ayton kind of reminds me of the way that Dabo Swinney talked about Deshaun Watson coming out of the NFL draft, or going into the NFL draft last year. Like, he was talking him up like he's Superman. He's the Michael Jordan of football, et cetera, et cetera. And Deshaun ended up lasting, what, until like the 10th or 11th pick?
Yeah.
Something like that. Houston traded up to get him when he played last year. He was amazing. So this, to me, felt a little different than the usual just, the coach talking up his own players. Like, I think Sean Miller really believes that DeAndre Ayton is an exceptional, like, once in every 20 years type of talent.
Yeah.
And that the NBA game when he gets to the NBA that it's going to come out even more than it did at Arizona, where the spacing, you know, wasn't as great as it could be, where he was the focal point of every single defense that he faced, et cetera.
Isn't it crazy to think that he's going to have more space to operate at the NBA level than he did in college? Usually, isn't it kind of the other way around? Except for his size.
Maybe. You know? I mean, the three-point line is farther out. The NBA has embraced the three-point shot, I think, even more than college.
Yeah.
It's not like college-wide, but I feel like it's almost NBA-wide. Like, every team is shooting more threes. You can't play zone.
Yeah.
Either. At least the same type of zone. So, I don't know. I'm a big fan of DeAndre Ayton as a player, and I think it's kind of a slam dunk for the Suns. I mean, I understand the idea of Doncic.
And, yep.
I mean, I haven't seen him play. I've seen highlights. I've heard all about him. I understand there's a connection with the new coach that they have there. But if you could get, like, the right-handed David Robinson and awesome. Add him to what you have, wouldn't you want to get that?
Oh, absolutely. And our good friend Ari Alexander over there at KVOA asked Sean Miller, who does DeAndre Ayton compare to? And he's had that question thrown at him a few times this year. And Miller always says, I always compare it to players that I've coached, that I've had personal experience with. And he always said during the year that he compares DeAndre weird. He compares him to David West of all players. Huh. Because of his high motor, the way he rebounds, but just his overall character and his personality resembles David West.
If you could have a 7-foot more athletic version of David West, again, I think that's a player that you'd like to have on your roster.
That's a pretty solid player. but Dave Hickey, Arizona's athletic director, spoke after Sean Miller's press conference. Wasn't 55 minutes.
Nope, it was 10.
Roughly 10.
Thank goodness.
He had some good stuff to talk about. Obviously, Arizona women's golf winning national championship. Mm-hmm. And he also talked about the whirlwind of a year that he's had, but he mainly highlighted all the good that Arizona is. And rightfully so, because he's AD. That's what he's supposed to do. But what did you take away out of Hickey's press conference?
Yeah, I think that my takeaway was he addressed the fact that there's good stuff that happened and there's bad stuff that happened, and that not every program is in the same place.
Sure.
You know, no one really expected women's golf to win the national championship, and they did. You know, for the Arizona basketball team, and maybe it wasn't a great season, but for most basketball programs, that would be a pretty good season, right? Football probably exceeded expectations compared to the year before. Baseball maybe fell a little bit below expectations, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But you know, the beauty of it for Hickey is that he's been here what, a year and 13 months, I think.
This year this was first full year.
So he's still, I mean, you can't lay any blame for anything that happened before that time on him. You know, he's still in his infancy as far as being the athletic director at Arizona, and he can kind of try to clean up whatever messes exist. He's hiring some new coaches, and women's tennis is going to have a new coach. We thought maybe basketball would, men's basketball, but obviously that didn't happen. My takeaway was every sport's in a different place. You kind of have to look at them individually, and then you kind of add it up as a whole to determine whether it was a, quote, good year or bad year for Arizona athletics. Where do you side on that good versus bad argument?
In terms of, like,
the whole athletic program for the whole academic year?
Of course, you know, there was a lot of legal stuff going on.
Yeah.
I mean, just outside of Arizona basketball. But you think about...
Or Arizona football, too.
Arizona football. Mm-hmm. Arizona football. The whole Craig Carter case. Orlando Bradford's case was winding down. There was just a lot of bad publicity that gave the U of A a really bad look.
Yep.
But, again, women's golf, winning that national championship, I will say this for a while. That was the best thing that could have happened for the U of A athletic department. For all the bad that's happened, and again, Hickey mentioned some good stuff, but winning a national championship, especially just out of the blue, it just came out of the blue. But for them to do that at the end of the year, that kind of put a bow on Arizona athletic season, that was a nice finish.
I think the best part about that, as far as the, you know, the perception of Arizona, is that it was on Golf Channel.
Yeah.
And people could see it, you know, as opposed to it not being televised at all or being on the Pac-12 network or ESPN3 or whatever. But it was like, felt like a lot of people were paying attention to it. It was super dramatic.
Yeah.
The team was really likable,
mm-hmm.
you know. And, you know, after all the kind of negative publicity they had, it was a nice way to cap off the season.
Absolutely. And then, you know, moving forward, again, there's all these renovational projects.
Yep.
The Aquatic Center, the pool's getting redone. Arizona Football Stadium is getting redone, the east side of the mm-hmm. stadium. And then, of course, they're adding that indoor practice facility, yep. which would be pretty cool.
Yep.
So,
yep.
A lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. And baseball, of course, got the new Terry Francona Hitting Center.
That's right.
Heading into this past season, and the Wildcats' offense was pretty good. Their pitching wasn't quite up to snuff, and maybe that was the reason that they didn't make the NCAA tournament. Let me ask you something, kind of a broader question that's related to baseball, but do you feel like there is an East Coast bias, especially in basketball and baseball? Like, USC did not make the basketball tournament this past year.
Yeah.
Sean Miller talked about that a little bit. After going 12-6
mm-hmm.
and finishing in second place in the league and going to the championship game of the conference tournament. In baseball, I think 10 SEC teams made it this year, including 9 at large and only 4 from the Pac-12. And Jay Johnson, his argument is like, all the best baseball players come from California, which takes up a big part of the Pac-12 footprint. So,
yeah.
Do you think it's a real thing or not?
I think it is a real thing. And again, when it comes to, it's kind of weird that we're tying this in, scheduling. Everything that all the scheduled games, again, specifically baseball, games are 4 hours roughly, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah.
And
Jay Johnson's games are. Go ahead.
And when do Arizona baseball games particularly start at? 6 o'clock?
Six, sometimes seven.
Sometimes seven. And East Coast is a few hours ahead. So by the time Arizona baseball game is ending, it's already, 1 o'clock in the morning?
Well, people certainly think that's a problem with football, too.
Yeah.
And the reason that, I know, Stanford's had, four guys finish runner-up for the Heisman? Or was it three or four?
Three.
Luck. Was Gerhardt, too?
Toby Gerhardt, was he?
I think he might have been.
So
let's just say it's four. I'll look it up while we're talking. But let's say it's Gerhardt, Luck, McCaffrey, and Love.
Yep.
And why is that? Why does that happen? Is that because all those East Coast voters are going to sleep and they're not actually seeing Stanford play at 7:30? I know that's one of the problems. I don't know what you can really do about that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in the SEC, for example, the game that starts at 5 o'clock here, that might be the primetime game on Saturday night, that's 8 o'clock local. They're starting at the same time locally.
Yeah.
That they are in the East Coast in a lot of these prime time games. It just so happens that it's very much later on the East Coast where a lot of the voters are, or a lot of the people who talk about teams on ESPN and so forth. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think there is a perception problem. I know scheduling is like a big issue.
Yes.
And Dave Hickey referenced that, especially being the case with baseball, that it's not that easy to just get on a bus and drive a couple hours to find somebody to play. But in Arizona's case, they had the number 11 non-conference RPI.
And they swept UCLA.
So out of conference, they scheduled like tough opponents as much as they could. And they had a really good out-of-conference record, and it didn't help them.
Well, didn't Jay Johnson say that after in his last game, which is that was a hell of a game, that
the one over ASU?
Yeah. He said that his case was – all of our non-conference opponents, or most of them, they all won their conference.
Yeah, a lot of them did. Yeah.
So when you're looking at non-conference opponents, and Arizona is coming out and beating all of these great teams, again, they're not your typical Power 5 teams, but if they're the cream of the crop in their conference, that has to be looked at very closely.
So to some degree, they didn't get credit for that, okay? And meanwhile, you know, they went 14-16. In the league, and they didn't really get credit for that either because of the perception of the Pac-12. And I kind of knew that this was going to happen. I didn't think they were going to get in. I don't think it was unfair that they didn't get in because of that 14-16 record. We could have a whole separate discussion about NCAA criteria. You know, like conference records were a very big deal for the baseball committee, and they didn't seem to be such a big deal for the basketball committee. You know, for example, leaving out USC, which went 12-6 in the Pac-12. So I don't know.
I see you, Mike.
Yeah, I don't buy the perception that that Jay was just kind of riding the coattails of Andy Lopez, you know, winning the championship that first year and then make the tournament the second year and don't make it the third year. I don't see that being the case at all. He really made a concerted effort to patch together good teams by adding JUCO transfers and so forth those first 2 years while some simultaneously trying to build from the ground up. And I think we're going to see the fruits of that over the next couple of years. I think the pitching is going to be better than it's been. It's been kind of their undoing the last couple of years.
Don't they have a Gatorade Player of the Year coming in that's a pitcher?
Well, they have him signed, but he's not going to come. Matthew Liberatore, yeah. Who's from the Phoenix area, he's ranked as maybe the second best prospect in the entire draft. So he's going to be a first-round pick Monday. His best buddy in the world is also committed to come here, Nolan Gorman, who's the biggest power hitter in the draft among high schoolers. He's a first baseman, third baseman. He's also a projected first-round pick. So part of the challenge with baseball recruiting is that you can recruit these great guys and then you can lose them. So yeah. I don't think those guys are going to come here, but the class still should be pretty good, and I think Arizona's going to be pretty good in what could be a pretty stacked Pac-12 next year. Andrew Vaughn was named the Player of the Year today. He's the first baseman from Cal. He almost won the Triple Crown.
Wow.
He was only a sophomore, so he's going to be back.
That's impressive.
And Spencer Torkelson, whom you saw play for ASU, leads the nation in home runs. He was a freshman. So there's going to be a lot of offense returning to the league. So they better get the pitching in order to have the type of season that they want to have.
Have you ever had a motivational screensaver, like on your phone or laptop?
Not in the way that Jay Johnson described what he's going to do. For those who don't know, he said during the selection show when they flashed up the first four out and Arizona was among the first four out, he took a picture of it with his phone and he said he was going to make it his screensaver as a reminder for the rest of his career about sort of like, hey, however good we think we are, we can always be better.
Yep.
We fell short this one season. How did that happen? Let's make sure it doesn't happen again. What did you make of that?
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
And it's going to be funny, whether it's next year or a few years down the road, if Arizona were to win a national championship and we could always reference back to that screensaver.
Do you really think he wouldn't change the screensaver? If they won the national championship, wouldn't you like to have a nice like team photo up there on your computer?
Just get it framed and put it right on my computer. No.
That's true.
Always got to have the motivation.
True. Yeah, I have a picture of my kids on my phone lock screen, so I guess that's my source of motivation.
I need to
keep my job here at the Star so that they can have food and clothing and shelter and so
Absolutely.
Forth.
Absolutely. I just have a beach.
We have a beach.
Sand.
Yeah. We dream of the beach here in Tucson.
All the time. Before we go,
yeah.
Arizona baseball had some conference honors.
Yeah, they did.
Alfonso Rivas, Nick Quintana,
Cesar Salazar made the All-Pac-12 team, which I fully expected. Cameron Cannon, Cal Stevenson, and Cody Deason made honorable mention. You could have made a strong argument that Cannon and Deason deserve to be All-Pac-12 as well.
Yeah.
Deason, maybe going 6-5 hurt him, but he had an ERA under 3. He was among the league leaders in strikeouts. And Cannon, I mean, gosh, if he wasn't the MVP of the team this year, he's pretty close. 8 home runs, 50 RBIs, hit over 300, led the team in walks. I feel like he and Nick Quintana come next year are going to be guys who are maybe taken on the first day of the MLB draft, which I think is rounds 1 and 2. This year, the guys who are heading into the draft, Rivas, Salazar, Deason, Flynn, are probably going to be day 2 picks. Okay. That's rounds 3 through 10. But some big-time talents in those two guys, Cannon and Quintana, will probably anchor the left side of what should be a really, really good infield next year.
Excellent. All right. That's the coolest substitute Bruce this side of the Mississippi, Michael Lev. All right. Well, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. For Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.